Well met, and welcome to episode 42, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for April 25th, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and this week we're going to begin a wrap-up of our month-long discussion of A Midsummer Night's Dream. We'll touch upon one last DVD, talk about a possible cast, and a production concept or two. We'll do a debrief of our video conference of this last week, and we'll finish up with our recap of this week's blog entries. Okay, so I did watch and listen to one more Midsummer DVD this month. It's the Glyndebourne Festival Opera 1981 production of the 1960 opera with music written by Benjamin Britten and a libretto by Peter Pears. It's directed by Dave Heather and produced by Peter Hall. Yep, he of the Royal Shakespeare Company and the director of the Swingin' 60s DVD from last month with the green and naked Judi Dench. The opera is in English. I was fearing a translation into Italian or German. And so it's primarily the text of the play. But it is opera, and so it's an acquired taste. And just as some of my students never quite got the taste for Shakespeare, I've yet to get a taste for opera. Or maybe just this opera, or maybe this particular composer. Some of the music and performance felt just too over the top, almost like a parody. On the other hand, there were some wonderful directorial aspects. The punkish fairies and seeming Elizabethan garb, but having much more a modern sensibility. If I'm not mistaken or reading too much into it, I'm pretty sure that the little Puck with his sky-high shock of red hair was an analog for Johnny Rotten. And if he wasn't, well, then somebody should do that, and quickly. I think it'd be really cool. There's a sequence early on when we're in the woods and the trees begin to move. What had seemed to be trees were actually dancers in costume. It was very cool, very magical. The only performance that stood out for me was Felicity Lott as Helena. Extremely sexy, rockin' voice. The aforementioned Puck, performed by Damien Nash, and Oberon, James Bowman, with his shock of Bride of Frankenstein hair, were both fun to watch, if not necessarily to listen to. And as I haven't yet acquired a taste for opera, I can't really recommend this. Then again, I can't really say to avoid it either. But for those of you with an interest, knock yourselves out. It's available on both Netflix and Amazon.com. Okay, every month we toss out a possible cast and play with a couple of production concepts. Now, usually I talk about the cast, then do the production concept, but this month I want to shake it up a bit and do them both concurrently. So here's what I see for Midsummer. I see the theater with a thrust stage with steps from both sides leading into the audience at the aisles. The set has a New Orleans feel to it. Before the house lights go down, we hear the sounds of a funeral brass band coming from behind us. Down the stage left aisle comes that six-piece brass band playing a dirge. Behind it, a black coffin carried by cast members. Following them, in the second line, are Theseus in a post-World War II military uniform with a black armband, and Hippolyta dressed in black mourning with a black veil. Behind them, Philostrate and Aegeus, followed by the four lovers, all in dark, subdued colors. The procession mounts the steps and comes onto the stage. The band moves all the way across to stage right. The pallbearers place the coffin now on risers center stage, with Theseus and Hippolyta standing downstage of the coffin, and the rest standing, waiting, to stage left. The band comes to the end of their song. The house lights come down, and Theseus and Hippolyta exchange their first speeches. Now, as Theseus, I see Lance Reddick, a brilliant actor from both The Wire and Fringe, with just enough of a haunted look to present a post-war soldier. When Theseus calls for Philostrate, he dismisses the band and the pallbearers, taking off his black armband and placing it on the coffin as he says, "Turn melancholy forth to funeral." As he speaks again to Hippolyta, he lifts her black veil to reveal Eva Mendez. She has that smoldering eroticism that's perfect for Hippolyta and for Titania, as I plan to double cast the nobles, Theseus Oberon and Hippolyta Titania, as Brooke and Noble have before. Aegeus clears his throat to interrupt, and we're into the main plot, meeting our lovers. Hermia, played by America Ferrera, Ugly Betty, Helena, Adrian Palicki, Tyra from Friday Night Lights, Lysander, Zac Efron, and Demetrius, Benjamin Bratt. I like the idea of Hermia being a Latina and Demetrius being Latino as well. Of course, I have an actor much older than the other lovers playing Demetrius. Brad is 46 compared to 26 for Ferrera, 28 for Palicki, and 22 for Efron. This is supported in the text by Hermia's comment that she doesn't match up with Demetrius because it would be too old, engaged, too young. Also, Helena is old Nidar's daughter. Could it be that her father is dead, and subconsciously her love for Demetrius is the search for another father figure? I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there, but I think it could work. Plus, I like the fact that Ferrera is just 5'1", while Palicki is 5'11", which makes that whole painted maypole exchange comically obvious. Now, when Theseus sides with Aegeus, I see Hippolyta putting her black veil down again, and walking off, almost coyly, looking behind her, forcing Theseus to pursue her, calling, "Come, my Hippolyta." I want the implication to be that Theseus' change of mind in Act 4 is really a change of heart prompted by Hippolyta. When the rude mechanicals appear to rehearse their play, I want them to be recognizable, if not instantly, then certainly at some point, as the brass band that brought us in at the top of the show. And I want this show filled with music. And for the rest of the play, it should be much more upbeat than the funereal hymn that brought us in. The bully bottom for this group should be another Wire veteran, and now a star of the new HBO series Tremé, Wendell Pierce. He just has that oversized feeling that you need for bottom. Now, as I mentioned before, I want to double cast the Hippolyta Titania and Theseus Oberon parts, mainly because I would hate to waste these actors on such small and chromatically drab Athenian roles. When we reach the woods, however, the show will explode with colors, as I see the fairy world presented like Mardi Gras Indian tribes. There is a tradition of African Americans dressing up in outfits influenced by Native American ceremonial dress. Colorful. Wild. The revelers, over the years, have formed tribes. There's now more than 36. I see both Oberon and Titania heading up their own tribes. To round out the fairy world's cast, I would put Christopher Mintz-Plasse in the role of Puck. For those who don't know him, Mintz-Plasse was McLovin from Superbad. I see Puck as mainly a good-natured screw-up, a real puck-up, if you will. He likes to act like he's the knavish sprite, but really, he just wants to be a good jester for his Oberon, and I think Mintz-Plasse fits the bill perfectly. When he transforms bottom, I see the transformation accomplished mainly by the use of a new ceremonial Mardi Gras Indian tribe headdress that's representative of a donkey's head. Now, in the woods, the lovers' costuming too should become more colorful and focused on delineating the contrasts between characters and their relationships. And when the lovers and bottom return to Athens, or New Orleans, I want the band leading the way, with music befitting a cakewalk. The wedding banquet should be presented on stage with the smell of gumbo and jambalaya and a crawfish boil, full and evocative. I see the performance of Pyramus and Thisbe too, filled with music. The show simply should be joyous. Now, a couple of weeks back, I watched the Disney film The Princess and the Frog, and as you no doubt have realized by now, I've been watching Tremé as well. And it just feels right, putting this joyous, magical play into a joyous, magical setting, a pre-Katrina, post-World War II oasis of mixed races, just as we see the different levels of human and sprite life mixing in the play. Now, on the other hand, watching that operatic version of the play, and more importantly its Puck, got me thinking about an even more modern view. Maybe London in the late 70s. Staid aristocratic youths living in a decaying urban setting. But they venture down into the tubes for nighttime adventures with punk rock fairies. I don't know if it would work, but I think it very well might. And regardless, it's certainly a concept worth knocking around a bit. Last Wednesday, April 21st, the Bill Shakespeare Project held its first video conference, codenamed Office Hours. We got off to a slow start, but we did have one person join in, Greg Robin Smith from up in the Seattle area. Greg Robin and I discussed his Shakespeare background, including a rewrite of Two Gents, simply called Verona, and his current project, a play dealing with the motifs and topics of many of Shakespeare's plays written in iambic pentameter as if the bard wrote it himself. Tying together shipwrecks, pirates, disguises, servants, and masters, and the location of Illyria, the romance is called To Each Their Own. He has sent me a copy, and when I get a chance, I'm definitely going to give it a read. Now, the video conference call itself worked well enough, save for a dropping internet connection during a windstorm here in Southern California to start the call, and a horrible technological meltdown to end it. Damn you, my Dell laptop.
Damn you! God damn you all to hell!
It's a shame that my attempts to record the doggone thing ended up being nothing more than an echo loop descending into a chaos of feedback, otherwise you'd hear part of it right now. But, despite the tech issues, I think I really want to make this a regular thing. So, with a perennial favorite, Romeo and Juliet, coming up next month, I definitely want to set up another session. So, ladies and gents, save the date. Monday, May 17th, 7 p.m. Pacific, for round two of Office Hours. Now this time, let's focus on the star-crossed lovers. So, let any high school freshman who's studying the play know about it, and hopefully, we'll get more people there. Personally, I'm shooting for three people this time. That's a 50% increase. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries this week, you've missed out on subjects including No Rhyme But a Reason, The MacGuffin, The Lunatic, the Lover, and the Poet, What the Puck Did He Say? And Demetrius, Tragic Hero or Jerk. Discuss. So, if you would like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page. Remember that the Facebook page is more for Shakespeare news and notes than daily discussions of our play of the month. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And of course, please join us again next week for our next podcast. Now next week, even though it's next month, we'll do a final wrap-up of this play with a few last words and points of discussion, and then transition into next month's play, Romeo and Juliet. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for April 25th, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon.